He's good. He was handing out free books to everybody. It was little, like, book about their libertarian beliefs. It was nice. You all set? Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting, which I will call to order. Okay. We have Commissioner Kalk calling in. Can you hear us, Commissioner Kalk?
Absolutely. And the town of Arisca is doing well.
Arisca?
Just blasted by that exit.
Oh, you're driving. All right. Are you parked? Are you parked?
I am.
All right. I thought so. I just wanted to confirm that. Okay.
Safety first.
That's right. That's right. Okay, and Commissioner Crispin and I are holding on the fort on the 12th floor. We have three esteemed members of the media here, Brian, the esteemed Dave, and Nick, and Mike are all here, so, and a variety of staff members, but no other members of the public. So we'll jump in. I had to just wanted to start off with a few opening comments, focusing on a meeting that we had yesterday with PHMSA. So we started these meetings with PHMSA. We meet with the regional managers of PHMSA semi-annually. So, and we started these meetings back when, shortly after the legislature declined to give us the authority to create an in-state hazardous materials inspection program. So we just felt that it was prudent for the state to be in more communication with PHMSA, so we are keeping track of what they're doing in our state, how they're monitoring the lines, what they're looking at, what they're finding, and just have a better working relationship with PHMSA, know who the players are and who's on the ground and that sort of thing. PHMSA does not have a inspector based in North Dakota. They've been trying for many years. I think Brian said as long as he's been on the commission, they've been trying to hire somebody, and they gave us an update on that hiring process as well. They're going to re-notice that opening, and so we're still pushing them to get somebody located in North Dakota. But so we go through a variety of issues and have a really good discussion with them about what's what they're finding and what they're doing in North Dakota and some of their protocols and all that sort of thing. Yesterday, we did get an update from them on their involvement with the Dakota Access Project, which was a really good discussion to have. And some of the things that we learned, I think, are of interest to others, so I'll share some of those today, and I think my colleagues might have some comments as well. But they have they reported that there have been 400 inspection days conducted by PHMSA on the Dakota Access Project. That's in North Dakota and the other states. So PHMSA is the agency, the federal agency, that has the responsibility for monitoring the construction, the safety standards for the pipelines, all pipelines, hazardous material pipelines in the country. And so they have the federal standards, and all these pipelines are built to those federal standards, and they have the inspectors on the ground during construction to oversee what's being done in terms of the safety elements of the line during construction. So they've spent 400 days inspecting the Dakota Access Pipeline so far. And they have, just to give you an idea of some of the things they cover, so they review all the specs for welding for all the various different contractors involved in the project. They look at the qualification tests for the welders. They do on-site inspections of the coating. They've sometimes watched them jeep the pipe, which is the final review of the coating, coating before it's bored. They inspect the welds and the welding procedures. They watch the contractors, their processes for lowering the pipe into the ditch, make sure they're using all the protective equipment, the booms and the rollers and all these sorts of things that are intended to maintain the coating on the pipe, not jeopardize that, and watching the angles used for when they're lowering in the pipe to make sure there isn't additional pressure put on the welds or the pipe in any way. And they monitor those techniques. They are on site often for the directional drills. They review them when doing the drill, and they also try to be on site when they're pulling the pipe through to maintain, you know, make sure again that they're using the booms and the rollers and all the various safety protocols to maintain the integrity of the pipe, and so that no additional stress is put on the pipe before it's pulled through. And they generally just inspect they overview and inspect the whole process that the company has in place for the construction to ensure that they're using best practices, that their whole process is up to standards. And they're also inspecting the inspectors. So all these companies hire inspectors to be on site to monitor the work that's being done. And so PHMS inspects inspectors to make sure the inspectors know what they're looking for and are up to snuff. And so the various inspectors that are involved include coating inspectors, welding inspectors, X-ray inspectors, environmental inspectors, and so they look at the training that is used for those inspectors, the training for the contractors, and they evaluate all the different tools that they use in the inspections, including their measurements. So this is just a quick overview on some of the inspection protocol. I do encourage you, we have media contact numbers for PHMSA if you'd like to have a deeper conversation with them on what they're doing and what they're finding and what their protocols are. I would encourage you to reach out to them and try to get some more information directly from them, because I do think it's an issue that's really relevant to the public and important to the overall understanding of how these projects are constructed and intended to operate, and what sort of procedures are in place to ensure their safety. I don't think it's fair to just accept as fact some of the statements that are being made about pipelines, the safety of pipelines, the unsafety of pipelines, the impact on our water resources, which without talking to the experts who have spent, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours trying to improve the safety and ensure the safety of these lines. The second thing that I just wanted to mention is that really this discussion with PHMSA confirmed that modern pipelines are the preferred method for transporting this product, hazardous materials and crude oil in particular, safer than transporting by rail, safer than transporting by truck. And PHMSA really thinks it's important to encourage companies to build and invest in new state-of-the-art facilities and phase out the older ones. And so we need to be careful in our regulatory processes that we aren't discouraging that and rather encouraging companies to make these kinds of investments that will really present progress for the industry and improve the safety of this infrastructure. So that really concludes my observations and takeaways from that PHMSA meeting, and that's all the opening comments I wanted to focus on today. So I'll kick it over to Commissioner Christman for any he might want to make.
Well, yesterday certainly was an interesting meeting, and you've pretty well summarized it. I wouldn't have much to add except for maybe one thing to reemphasize the point and then maybe add to it a little bit. And I'll cite an example of this later, but I have plenty of issues with some of the things that the federal government does. But it was nice sitting in with people from the federal government that are actually out doing the work that, you know, seems they're just doing a fantastic job and really have as their sole mission the integrity of this transportation system. And so that was pretty refreshing, and I really enjoyed it, and you summed it up pretty well. I wanted to switch to two other topics, unless you just put them together as one, and that's awards. We had talked about it at a previous meeting when we approved the choice, but tomorrow we are actually going to be presenting our annual reclamation award. And it goes to the Freedom Mine, which is a North American coal mine up north of Beulah. And it has to do with some hydrological work that they have done over the years in an area. It's about 10 or 11 square miles. And they had 33 sedimentation ponds in that area. And over the the mining process took a couple decades, but the reclamation process was a little over 3 years. They completely reclaimed all those reclamation ponds. They ended up putting in 11 stock ponds and several wetlands areas for wildlife and such. Just did a fantastic job and did it so quickly. And you know, I of course talked to Carol Dewing, the president out there, and Troy Langang, the environmental manager, and Senator Unruh, of course. But it's interesting how they quickly deflect a lot of the credit to, you know, the planners and managers and the operators and folks who did this. And so actually tomorrow when we present this at the Lignite Energy Council meeting, they're going to have Terrence Schmidt, their senior environmental specialist, and Joel Schulte, one of their operators, come and actually receive the award. And Mr. Schulte has been an operator out there a long time, and actually they brought in some special low-impact equipment, a dozer and such, that was able to do that work without causing compaction problems or things like that. So it was quite a process, and I think a really well-deserved award. And speaking of well-deserved for them, but speaking of well-deserved awards, we did a press release back in July when we found out that our Abandoned Mine Lands Division would be receiving this. But the National Association of Abandoned Mine Lands Programs presented an award for work that we did here in 2015 at the Halleck Mine out by Bowman. And this was presented in late September out in Bozeman, Montana. It's quite a convention. I had a note here on it somewhere. A large number of states are represented out there. And anyway, Joan Briner gave a couple presentations out there on the project. It was particularly tough because there's a natural gas pipeline that goes through that area and roads. And they were able to bring that process together. And just like I was pointing out that the mine recognizes other people, in the room today we have Jim Deutsch and Bill Dodd and Joan Briner. But, you know, understanding the way our system works here, it's a team effort. Our whole team, as well as contractors, come together to bring a project like this to fruition. But I had Bill and Joan bring the award down so we could show it off a little bit for the press and anybody who might be watching on the Internet. It is quite an award and well-deserved. Our AML people do a fantastic job. And the last thing I kind of wanted to point out on the AML program, as I always try to emphasize, it's funded by kind of an extra tax on active coal mines. And that is only in place to go through 2021. And so there is an effort being put forth to get new legislation to extend that into the following decade. But there's also an effort to take $1 billion out of it to help in kind of job development and economic development programs in especially some of the Appalachian areas that have been devastated by the president's war on coal. And so as much as I sympathize with the poor folks who are displaced from their jobs because of the administration, I really would hate to think that they're going to take $1 billion out of this important program and use it up quickly on an economic development project when there's so much more work at these old abandoned coal mines that will need to be done for decades to come. So that's all I wanted to say on that, except for congratulations to our team. You've done a fantastic job for many years on this project specifically and right up to today. So thank you.
Yep. I want to echo that. Great work, you guys. It's really an important public service that goes largely unnoticed. But that was a pretty important project in an area that could have caused some potential public danger real close to a road there with the natural gas pipeline. So it was very comforting to know the minute we learned about it, you guys were on site and making sure that the area didn't spread and that the, you know, proper work was being done to mitigate that issue. So thanks for your ongoing work and dedication and generally cheerful attitudes here at the commission as well. We like that.
Yeah,
that's right. All right. So, Commissioner Kalk, any opening comments from the Arisca exit?
The Arisca Tower City Region. No, I just also echo on the congratulations to our folks, but encourage the folks upstairs to keep an eye on Jim Deutsch, that he doesn't bring that award home with him when he retires to keep it at the PSC.
He'd need to have a very large wall for it.
Very well. No, I just want to just thank the commission. I'll be representing the commission at the advisory council meeting here at Upper Great Plains here in a couple hours. And then tomorrow, go over and talk with Fergus Falls about some of the SPP ongoing FERC stuff. The only comments I had was just maybe to tag on to what Commissioner Fedorchuk said about the PHMSA discussion. And I think it's always difficult to explain the relationship between us and PHMSA. And I think, Julie, you set it up beautifully. I just want to add on a little bit more to it. What really I think becomes one of the big moments is, you know, we go through the siting process according to state law, but the second that crude oil starts flowing through the pipeline, then it becomes PHMSA jurisdictional for the operation and maintenance. But then if something happens like a damage prevention case, then we go ahead and we process that ourselves. So it's that, you know, that symbiote relationship between us and PHMSA. And I think that we've really done a nice job as the commission to work with them. But there's a lot of work ahead, and I do appreciate the discussion yesterday. So just other than that, thanks for letting me call into the meeting.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, Brian. Well, there's a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, we have a really pretty short agenda this morning, so we'll get right at it. The first item was errantly attached to me, so that one gets moved to Brian because that's really in his portfolio. So we'll go ahead with the JF2. I move the commission adopt the order on recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in NST Express LLC 8-inch crude oil pipeline McKenzie County signing application case number PU-16-305.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. This is a pipeline, 3.6 miles of 8.6-inch outside diameter steel pipeline and associated facilities for transmission of crude oil in McKenzie County. The hearing for this project was held on September 13th in Watford City. And this pipeline, just to give you a little idea of what it does, it will originate on existing Tesoro Logistics breakout tank located approximately 6 miles north of Alexander, and then it'll terminate at the NST Express facility located approximately 9 miles northwest of Alexander, which is currently under construction. This will, the maximum capacity of the project will be 40,000 barrels per day. It will be constructed and operated in compliance with the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 49, Part 195, Hazardous Liquids Pipeline Safety Regulation. The total cost of the project will be $6.8 million. In terms of the studies, the agency or the company did all the required studies, including the Class 3 Cultural Resource Inventory and various natural resource surveys. The consulted with a wide variety of agencies, and all of those consultations are included in the order, and all the issues identified are cited in the order. The State Historic Preservation Officer has confirmed no significant sites will be affected by the project. But going through a little bit more in detail, there's no exclusion areas present within the survey. There are a couple avoidance areas. There are four mobile homes within 500 feet of the project, and they have received waivers from those mobile home units. And there were two cultural resource sites that were identified and remain unevaluated for the National Register of Historic Places. They're eligible for that, and so it was important to deal with those appropriately. The sites will be avoided by the route and are less than 50% of the corridor. So the company is going to fence the site boundaries during construction, and a qualified archaeological monitor will be present for the ground-disturbing activities within 100 feet of the boundary of each site. Just call that out to give you an example of how these kinds of sites are identified ahead of time, and when they can't be you know, they're usually avoided. But when they're even, like in this case, a little closer than we'd like to the normal, to the actual construction, they're actually partitioned off, and additional protections are in place to make sure that they aren't impacted. And then the pipeline is, you know, basically underground and unnoticed once the construction is complete. So accordingly, no avoidance areas will be impacted by this project. So with that, I think that kind of covers all the key points, and I am going to support the granting of this permit today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. That concludes my portfolio. And I don't believe Commissioner Crispin has any items on his agenda today.
Just a seconder today in the voting.
Oh. Well, we know that you're first in some people's agendas. Okay, Brian, it's all yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just interesting that Commissioner Crispin had like 50 motions the last two meetings. He couldn't spread them around a little bit, but I understand he's a busy guy. Okay, item BK1. I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's 230 KV transmission line, Ward McHenry County's public convenience and necessity, case number PU16644.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In September of this year, NSP filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct a mine at load-serving project in the Magic City substation and approximately 20 miles of new 230 KV line, basically to secure up the grid in that area. It's also going to be up in the Great River Energy area as well. But what this does today is set forth a notice for hearing. Otherwise, we'll probably do this with informal. Anyone requesting a hearing must do so by November 14th of this year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Item BK2, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing regarding a request to amend the commission order in Northern State Power Company's electric rate increase, case number PU07776.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In July of this year, NSP filed a motion to amend the order. And basically, an order that we had back in, the motion, 07776 required that the company, being NSP, come in for an advanced termination and prudence for any transmission facility that was at least 50 miles long. And what the NSP is asking us is that we basically amend that order, saying that we no longer put that requirement in there, and they feel that because of the MISO planning process and the way that things are now, I guess, basically discussed through that process, our role in MISO, that they feel an ADP coming in ahead of time is no longer appropriate. Because in our role in MISO, we basically do the same thing. So that would be their opinion of that. Anyone requesting a formal hearing must do so by November 14th of this year. Otherwise, the commission can settle it for an informal. So since it's just as a notice, I'll share my thoughts until we get to the actual hearing. But I do appreciate the company filing this now because there's certainly some basis for the discussion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Brian, do you envision having an informal on this?
At a bare minimum, Madam Chair, I don't know that we need a formal hearing unless one of my colleagues would like one, but I will have a lot of questions about the notification of what they'll do inside of MISO.
And I would agree we'd need to have an informal for sure, just to better understand. And does this mean, the threshold is facilities that are at least 50 miles long, so 50 miles and longer, so any transmission facility basically won't come for an ADP.
Well, I think that's some of the discussion that we'll need to clarify because I had the similar type of questions.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And finally, item BK3, to complete the NSP day, if you will, I move the commission adopt the order in Northern State Power Company's 2015 Power Purchase Agreement Cost Compliance Filing, case number PU16458.
Second.
In June of this year, NSP filed a compliance filing in accordance with the appropriate section of the comprehensive settlement agreement that we agreed to with NSP. One of the things that came out of that was that the company would provide the commission a list of new power purchase agreements that were less than 50 megawatts in size. And really the backdrop here is that during the rate case, of course, there was many things that NSP was doing to comply with Minnesota law that I know that the North Dakota Commission did not necessarily agree with. And one of the things that currently at issue is there's a power purchase agreement in place that a 718-kilowatt solar facility is being built in Minnesota to comply with some of their mandates, and they would like those costs to be spread to North Dakota customers. And basically what this order today does, it does not approve those costs going forward. And while the cost is, I would say, relatively insignificant, and I hate to say that about any cost because every cost is significant, but the average cost of this, if we would have approved it, would have been 0.01 cents per month for the average customer using 750 kilowatts. So there has been some costs that have flowed through on this in the fuel clause adjustment, and so this order today does not require the company to go back and refund those amounts because, quite honestly, it would cost more to go back, calculate it, and refund than it would be worth. But what this order does today is remove those costs going forward for this solar project. And also NSP has let us know that they're considering another 700 megawatts of solar with a very high cost going forward. So I think this today really illustrates the good work that our staff did in setting the stage to make sure that costs are not flowing to North Dakota customers through the fuel clause adjustment that are not appropriate. And prior to the rate case in the actual order, we had a kind of a gray area where their costs were flowing through the fuel clause that maybe we didn't quite notice as quickly as we should have. But we set the stage in the rate case that they have to let us know. We're much more well aware of it. And I think this order today is very much in order and appropriate, and I look forward to supporting it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'd like to just echo the comments and say I think this is a small but very important step that the commission is taking, again, consistent with some of the things that we've done in the last couple of years that are standing firm to some of the really tried and true principles in North Dakota and leading reasons why we have among the lowest utility rates in the nation, and that is that we have two really important filters, low-cost planning and need. And I realize that the entire electric industry is going under a significant transformation with renewables, but we can still do that and stand true to those principles of low-cost planning and need. And this order today, while it's a small, unnoticeable impact on customers' bills, it sets an important precedent to Minnesota that when you come back with the additional 700 megawatts of solar projects, even if they're very small increments, that North Dakota is going to stand firm on its principles of low-cost planning and need. And I think that those have served the state very well for many, many years, and we need to stand firm to those principles.
And just to kind of add to your point about low-cost planning, you know, it would seem like it would be simple to disregard that when it's, you know, on average a penny a month for customers. But if you disregard the principle over a penny a month, then where do you draw the line? Is it a nickel or a dime or 50 cents or a couple dollars? Where would you draw the line if it's not a real principle? And so this really allows the camel to get their nose under the tent if we disregard the principle because of the smallness of the project. And so I think we're on the right track here.
That's a really good point, Randy. And we've seen how in the past the commission did let some of these smaller projects slip in with the seabed projects, they're called. On the seabed, what does that stand for? Community-based energy development projects. This is a, these are projects that were approved by the commission and worked into rates. Not really approved, but they were part of the fuel cost rider, and they weren't rejected by the commission in previous years. And then in a recent rate case, we tallied up the cost of those. It was $5 million to North Dakota customers, and now those have been removed because of the recent settlement with the company. And so this is, you know, we've learned from that in the past, and we're trying not to repeat that in the future.
Is there any further discussion?
Maybe, Darrell, I should just restate it. It's, and I might have said it wrong in the motion, but it's 0.01 cents per month. So it's not even a penny a month. And that's why we didn't have them go back retroactively and try to refund the money. So 0.01 cents per month for the average customer.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay.
That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. All right. That concludes the regular agenda. And I don't have a calendar in my folder that I'm putting my fingers on real quickly, so I'll skip the announcement portion and open it up for any questions.
Just going to ask, go back on the PHMSA discussion. Mm-hmm. From what I'm gathering, you're very confident that Dakota Access is doing, you know, the state-of-the-art stuff at this point?
Everything we've heard from the inspectors indicates that, and from what we saw in our application process and review, absolutely.
Did they say what percentage of the pipeline in North Dakota is completed?
You know, we could check on that. We have those construction inspection reports, and we probably recently got one because they usually come at the first part of the month, so we can check. Last I checked, it was 60% complete, but you know, various stages, like a month ago the grading was 90% complete, and so there's, you know, certain milestones that are further along, but we'll check up on that and get that back to you. Julie Prescott, if you're listening, maybe you can look at the inspection report and bring that in.
Overall, what is PHMSA's take on how the construction process has been going in North Dakota so far? Have they had any concerns that they raised with you or anything?
They didn't raise any concerns, but again, for an overall comment, I think you should talk to PHMSA and ask them. And they assured us, because we did spend some time complaining to them about the lack of accessibility that the media in North Dakota has to them. And so they have assured us that they're going to be more responsive. And we have numbers that are supposed to lead you to a live human being. And so we'll provide those to you. And if you don't have any luck, I urge you to let me know, because I will be following up on that with the media people, with the regional people, and probably with the director herself, because it's just not appropriate for them to be so inaccessible to our media questions from our local folks.
How will we get those numbers?
I'll grab them from Stacy. Did you write those down?
Yeah.
Did they send us? They were going to send us the names of everybody and the admin assistant names. Maybe we can check with Pat and double.
Emails would be okay.
I got the number in the
email. Emails
okay.
Would be okay.
All right. I would like a name too, just of that admin assistant. He should be able to get that from Alan in short order. Anything else?
Do you think the commission thinks that seabed, they're getting seasick? I'm sorry. I haven't done this for a few weeks. I needed to get one.
Anything else? All right. Thanks for being here.
That's one question you're not going to get answered, Dave.
Hey, Julie, before I forget, I'd authorize John to sign the orders in my absence.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. Okay, that concludes our regular agenda. We'll come back in 5 minutes for the admin portion of the meeting. Or do you want to move straight into it, Brian, since you're...
I can call back in. We can take a tick. How about give me 10 minutes, and I can retool here in this end a little bit.
Okay, 10 minutes.
So call it quarter of?
Sounds good.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.